Welcome to Akatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Hello and welcome. In this deep dive, we're tackling a novel that feels eerily relevant, maybe even more so now than when it was written. It's Don DeLillo's White Noise.
Ah, DeLillo, born 1936, Bronx native.
Right, and he's often called, a literary prophet, always digging into American anxiety, technology, media, consumerism, that constant background dread.
Definitely. You see it in his other big works, too, like Libra or Underworld. He just gets the texture of modern life.
He really does. He captures the absurdity, the sheer noise, but there's always this deep humanity underneath. It's what he calls the world's white noise, all that information, advertising, tech chatter. It shapes us, maybe warps us. Mm. And White Noise, which came out in 85, won the National Book Award. It's probably his most, approachable masterpiece.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
And its foresight is, frankly, pretty chilling. He wrote this before the internet really took over, yet it absolutely nails our current feeling of information overload, how reality and media get blurred.
It's uncanny.
It is. So, yeah, it's a sharp satire of consumer culture for sure. But beneath that, it's digging into mortality, family, how we find meaning when we're just saturated.
So today we're going to walk through the whole story, right?
Exactly. The plot, the characters who are unforgettable, and the big themes that make it still resonate so much. So when you think about this book, what's the first thing that jumps out?
Well, it throws you straight into this family, the Gladneys. Jack, Babette, their sort of patchwork family of kids from previous marriages.
In this perfectly named fictional college town blacksmith.
Right, blacksmith.
Yeah.
And their life looks like this, almost a performance of American suburban normalcy. It's all carpools, grocery shopping, watching TV together, very carefully managed.
Like a script.
Yeah. Exactly. But underneath all that routine and layered over by this constant hum, the white noise of ads, news, just stuff, you feel these deeper anxieties bubbling away, unspoken things.
And that careful construction doesn't last, does it? The real conflict kicks off when Jack finds out Babette's secret.
It's the dialer.
The dialer, yeah. This experimental drug that's supposed to get rid of the fear of death, which ironically just opens up a whole new can of worms anxiety-wise.
Right.
Her secret doesn't just expose, the deception. It makes Jack face his own terror about dying.
Mm-hmm.
So the novel really asks this huge question. How do you live knowing you're going to die, especially when our culture tries so hard to pretend death isn't real?
It's a question that hits hard.
Mm-hmm.
And the characters trying to figure that out are just fascinating. Take Jack Gladney, our narrator.
Middle-aged professor.
Of Hitler studies.
Right.
A field he literally made up. And he doesn't speak German. It's darkly funny.
It is. And it says so much about academia, maybe. He puts on this whole act, the dark sunglasses, the robes. It's very theatrical.
A fragile facade, though.
Totally fragile. But his journey isn't just about academic posturing. His whole intellectual world gets shattered, really, before the big event in the middle of the book.
The airborne toxic event?
Yeah. Before that, his fear of death is kind of abstract, something he can think about. But after he gets exposed,
it becomes real, tangible. It's not a philosophical idea anymore. It's a data profile. Statistics.
Yeah.
His death becomes this quantifiable thing.
And then it just strips away all his intellectual defenses, doesn't it?
Completely. He gets desperate, tries all these clumsy ways to find meaning, control, even that whole sort of noir-inspired revenge plot later. It's almost farcical, but born from real fear.
And then Babette, she seems like the grounded one initially. The family's emotional center, teaches aerobics to seniors, seems quite down to earth.
But that cheerfulness is hiding something, right? Yeah. Her fear of death is maybe even worse than Jack's.
Definitely more acute.
And it pushes her to do things like the dialer and the deal she makes with Willie Mink to get it. This is really tragic look at desperation, how far someone might go to escape being human almost.
It really makes you question the cost of trying to run from those deep fears.
Mm.
And navigating this with them is Murray J. Siskind, Jack's colleague. He's kind of the novel's philosopher in residence.
Yeah, the pop culture theorist. Former sports writer, finds deep psychic data in like car crashes and supermarkets.
Right. He offers this running commentary on everything, media, death, even how stories work. Very meta.
Murray's so important because he gives you this lens, this theoretical way to look at what's happening. He's the one who puts the idea in Jack's head that violence, maybe even killing, could be life-affirming. in a world full of simulations.
It's provocative, to say the least. He's that detached postmodern voice, questioning everything, embracing the irony.
And the kids, Heinrich, Denise, Steffi, and Wilder, the toddler, they feel like this collective observer unit.
They often seem more tuned into the weirdness than the parents, don't they?
Absolutely. Heinrich's always debating Jackie's so skeptical. Denise is worried about her mom, very mature, and Wilder. He's almost mystical.
That tricycle right at the end.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Across the highway. It's terrifying, but also pure. Like a moment completely outside the noise that drowns everyone else.
Yeah.
Miraculous, almost.
Okay, so let's track the plot. Part one, waves and radiation. It really sinks us into the Gladney routine in Blacksmith. That constant barrage of information is palpable.
You get Jack's weird Hitler studies job. Mm. His secret German lessens the irony. And those late night talks between Jack and Bobette.
So tender.
Yeah, tender, but just filled with this dread about who dies first. And the mystery starts here, right? Mm. Babette's memory slips. Mm. Denise finding the dialer vial.
It's how DeLillo layers the ordinary household details with these big philosophical anxieties. It builds this amazing unease, even the supermarket.
Murray's theory. Secular cathedral.
Exactly. A place for seeking comfort through buying stuff. Communal transcendence via consumerism.
And then, bang, part two, the airborne toxic event. That careful balance is just shattered.
Yeah, the train derailment, the chemical cloud, niadine D, the airborne toxic event, sirens, evacuation, total chaos for the family.
This is where those vague fears become terrifyingly real. Jack gets exposed, just briefly.
But it's enough. The diagnosis follows that data profile. Suddenly his death isn't abstract, it's statistical. It changes everything for him. His intellectual armor is gone.
It's no longer a puzzle, it's a prognosis.
Mm-hmm.
So part three, dialorama. They go back home to Blacksmith, but it's different. Those sunsets.
Oh, the sunsets.
It's crazy.
Spectacularly beautiful, but unnatural. A constant aesthetic reminder of the poison still lingering.
And Jack, now consumed by his own mortality, finally confronts Babette about the dialer.
And she confesses everything. The affair with Willie Mink for the drug, how the drug didn't even work. It's devastating.
And this, plus Murray's weird philosophical prodding about violence.
Sends Jack off the rails a bit. Yeah, he goes on this revenge quest. To kill Willie Mink. Like taking a life will somehow give him power over his own death.
But the climax isn't some action movie scene, is it?
Not at all. It's a total anticlimax, really. Willie Mink is just this pathetic mess, incoherent, addicted to his own drug.
Jack shoots him, but then...
Then, yeah, this unexpected empathy kicks in. He takes Mink to a hospital run by German nuns.
And the final twist?
The nuns are atheists. They only pretend to believe to comfort people. It just pulls the rug out from under any possibility of, like, traditional solace for Jack.
Wow.
So the ending is ambiguous. Life goes back to mundane routines. You have Wilder's crazy tricycle ride and that last scene in the supermarket.
Everyone just finding comfort in the aisles, the brands, the routine. Still living in the noise. Haunting.
Okay, so we've walked through the story. Let's pull back and look at those big themes DeLillo is exploring. The fear of death is obviously central.
It's the engine of the whole novel, really. And DeLillo presents it as more than just personal fear. It's like a cultural sickness, especially in a world losing traditional faith systems. The airborne toxic event is almost a metaphor for that fear made physical, floating over them.
And if traditional faith fades, what replaces it? DeLillo points straight at consumerism as a new religion. It's fascinating.
It's not just buying things. It's a ritual.
Exactly. Seeking comfort, stability, meaning through stuff.
Yeah.
The supermarket as the new cathedral. Brands and ads as the liturgy. He writes that bit, remember? The supermarket shelves have been rearranged. There is agitation and panic in the aisles.
Yeah. A tiny change causes real anxiety. It shows how much they rely on that consumer structure for meaning.
Which ties into media saturation and the nature of reality. He saw this so clearly. The line between an event and how it's represented just evaporates.
Right, that constant white noise numbs actual experience. You don't know what's real anymore. Like that quote about the guys in protective suits.
Oh, yeah. The men in my Lex suits were there to verify the existence of an event. Their presence testified to the reality of the toxic cloud.
Their presence made it real, more than the cloud itself.
Yeah.
It's like how we experience things through screens now.
And this affects identity, right? The fragility of identity and family. The Gladneys are this very postmodern family unit. And Jack himself says it. I am the false character that follows the name around.
Such a great line. It nails that feeling of performing yourself in a world full of choices and media images.
And the desire for quick fixes comes under scrutiny, too. technology, and pharmaceutical solutions to human problems.
Dialer is the perfect example. A pill to cure fear of death. DeLillo's deeply skeptical. It just causes more problems, doesn't solve the root issue.
It speaks volumes about our desire to just medicate away existential discomfort.
Mm-mm. And even intellectual pursuits get a satirical look, like academic life and intellectual authority.
Jack's Hitler studies being the prime example. It's absurd, right? It questions what expertise even means in this confusing world. Is it a refuge or part of the noise itself?
Good question.
And DeLillo's style is so key to all this. The narrative perspective first person, just Jack's viewpoint. We're stuck in his head with all the paranoia, the humor, the detachment.
It really pulls you in. Yeah. And the structure of those three parts, it mirrors their journey perfectly, from the abstract fear to the direct hit.
And the irony is everywhere. Jack not speaking German, Dialer making things worse, the atheist nuns. It highlights how absurd it is to look for solid ground.
Oh, and the dialogue. It's so stylized. People talk in fragments, almost like sound bites or ad copy.
What does that tell us, do you think?
It shows how disconnected they are, how the white noise has seeped into their language, their thoughts, and the symbolism is so potent. The supermarket, the toxic event, is this catch-all for modern fears. TV is the family oracle.
Right. Babette even wonders, what if death is nothing but sound, electrical sound, how awful, captures that technological dread.
But maybe the deepest insight on craft comes from Murray, about plots themselves.
Oh, yeah. All plots tend to move deathward. We edge near death every time we plot.
It links our need for stories directly to knowing we're going to die. Powerful stuff.
Reading this book is, well, it's an experience. It's disorienting.
Definitely. You laugh at the satire, but then you feel this creeping dread, this real sadness for them trying to find meaning in all the static. DeLillo makes the bizarre feel intensely human.
And that's why it stays relevant, I think. It holds up a mirror. It makes you ask, how much white noise shapes my life? How do I deal with these big fears? It's like a map for navigating right now, isn't it? Still unsettling.
It is. Ultimately, white noise reminds us that while we may be overwhelmed by the static of modern life, the human need for connection and meaning endures, even in the face of our most fundamental fears.
It acknowledges the fear, the absurdity, but still affirms that search for meaning, even with all the uncertainty. Mandatory closing line.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.